The Christian in Complete Armor by William Gurnall, Branch the Third, A Cautionary Direction, Be Strong in the Lord. In this we have a cautionary direction. Having exhorted the saints at Ephesus, and in them, all believers to a holy resolution and courage in their warfare, lest they should be mistaken, and beget in them an opinion of their own strength for the battle. The apostle leads them out of themselves for this strength, even to the Lord. Be strong in the Lord. From this we observe that the Christian strength lies in the Lord, not in himself. The strength of the general and other hosts lies in his troops. He flies, as a great commander once said to his soldiers, upon their wings. If their feathers be clipped, their power broken, he is lost. But in the army of saints, the strength of every saint, yea, of the whole host of saints, lies in the Lord of hosts. God can overcome his enemies without their hands, but they cannot so much as defend themselves without his arm. It is one of God's names, the strength of Israel. 1 Samuel 15, verse 29. He was the strength of David's heart. Without him, this valiant worthy that could, when held up in his arms, defy him that defied a whole army, behave himself strangely for fear at a word or two that dropped from the Philistine's mouth. He was the strength of his hands. He taught his fingers to fight. And so is the strength of all his saints in their war against sin and Satan. Such propound a question, whether there be a sin committed in the world in which Satan has not a part. But if the question were whether there be any holy action performed without the special assistance of God's concurring, that is resolved. Without me, you can do nothing. John 15, verse 5. Thinking strength of God. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. 2 Corinthians 3, 5. We apostles, we saints that have habitual grace, yet this lies like water at the bottom of a well, which will not ascend without all our pumping until God pour in his exciting grace, and then it comes. To will is more than to think, to exert our will into action, more than both. These are of God. For it is God which works in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Philippians 2, verse 13. He makes the heart new, and having made it fit for heavenly motion, setting every will, as it were, in its right place, then he winds it up by his actuating grace and sets it on going. The thoughts to stir, the will to move, and make towards the holy object presented. Yet here the chariot is set, and cannot ascend the hill of action until God puts his shoulder to the will. To will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not. Romans 7, verse 18. God is at the bottom of the ladder, and at the top also, at every round, in his ascent to any holy action. Well, now the Christian is set on work. How long will he keep close to it? Alas, poor soul, no longer than he is held up by the same hand that empowered him at first. He has soon wrought out the strength received, and therefore, to maintain the tenure of a holy course, there must be renewing strength from heaven every moment, which David knew, and therefore, when his heart was in as holy a frame as ever he felt, and his people by their free will offering declared the same, yet even then he prays that God would keep this forever in the imagination of the thoughts of the heart of his people and prepare their heart to him. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 18. He adored the mercy that made them willing, and then he implores his further grace to strengthen them and tie a knot that these precious pearls newly strung on hearts might not slip off. The Christian, when fullest of divine communications, is but a mirror without a foot. He cannot stand or hold what he has received any longer than God holds him in his strong hand. Therefore Christ, when bound for heaven, and ready to take his leave of his children, bespeaks his father's care of them in his absence. Father, keep them, John 17, verse 11. As if he had said they must not be left alone. They are poor, shiftless children. They can neither stand nor go without help. They will lose the grace I have given them and fall into those temptations which I kept them from while I was with them. If they be out of thy eye or arms but for a moment, Father, keep them. Again, consider the Christian as addressing himself to any duty of God's worship. Still his strength is in the Lord. Number one, would he pray? Where will he find materials for his prayer? Alas, he knows not what he should pray for, as we ought, Romans 8, verse 26. Let him alone, and he will soon pray himself into some temptations or other, and cry for that which it were cruelty in God to give. And therefore God puts words in our mouths. Take with you words and say, Hosea 14, verse 2. Well, now he has words put into his mouth. Alas, they will freeze on his very lips, if he has not some heart-heating affections to thaw the tap. And where shall this fire be had? Not a spark to find on his own hearth, except it be some strange fire of natural desires which will not serve. Whence then must a fire come to thaw the iciness of the heart but from heaven? The Spirit, he must stretch himself upon the soul as the prophet on the child. And then the soul will come to some kindly warmth and heavenly heat in its affections. The Spirit must groan, and then the soul will groan. He helps us to these sighs and groans which turn the cells of prayer. He dissolves the heart, and then it bursts out of the heart by groans of the lips, by heavenly rhetoric, out of the eyes as from a floodgate with tears. Yet further, now the creature is enabled to wrestle with God in prayer. What will he get by all this? Suppose he be weak in grace, is he able to pray himself strong, or corruption weak? No, this is not to be found in prayer, as an act of the creature. This drops from heaven also. In the day when I cried, you answered me, and strengthened me with the strength in my soul. Psalm 138, verse 3. David received it in duty, but had it not from his duty, but from his God. He did not pray himself strong, but God strengthened him in his prayer. Number two, hearing the word. Well, cast your eyes once more upon the Christian as engaging in another ordinance of hearing the word preached. The soul's strength to hear the word is from God. He opens his heart to attend, Acts 16, verse 14. Yea, he opens the understanding of the saint to receive the word, so as to conceive what it means. It is like Samson's riddle, which we cannot unfold without his heifer. He opens the womb of the soul to conceive by it, as the understanding to conceive of it, that the barren soul becomes a joyful mother of children. David sat for half a year under the public lectures of the law, and the womb of his heart shut up until Nathan comes, and God with him. And now is the time of life. He conceives presently, yea, and brings forth the same day, falls presently into the bitter pangs of sorrow for his sins, which went not over until he had cast them forth in that sweet 51st psalm. Why should this one word work more than all the former, but that God now struck in with his word, which he did not before? He is therefore said to teach his people to profit, Isaiah 48, verse 17. He sits in heaven that teaches hearts. When God's Spirit, who is the head master, shall call a soul from his usher to himself and say, soul, you have not gone the way to receive by hearing the word. Thus and thus conceive of such a truth, improve such a promise. Presently the eyes of his understanding open, and his heart burns within him while he speaks to him. Thus you see the truth of this point, that the Christian strength is in the Lord. Now we shall give some demonstrations the reasons. First, the first reason may be taken from the nature of the saints and their grace. Both are creatures, they and their grace also. Now it is in the very nature of the creature to depend upon God its maker, both for being and operation. Can you conceive an accident to be out of its subject? Whiteness out of the wall, or some other subject? It is impossible that the creature should be or act without strength from God. This to be, act in and of himself, is so incommunicable a property of the deity that he cannot impart it to his creature. God is, and there is none beside him. When God made the world, it is said indeed he ended his work, that is, of creation. He made no new species and kinds of creatures more, but to this day he has not ended his work of providence. My Father works hitherto, saith Christ, John 5, verse 17. That is, in preserving and empowering what he has made with strength to be and act, that therefore he is said to hold our souls in life. Works of art, which man makes when finished, may stand some time without the workman's help, as a house, when the carpenter that made it is dead. But God's works, both of nature and grace, are never off his hand. And therefore, as the Father is said to work, hitherto, for the preservation of the works of nature, so the Son, to whom is committed the work of redemption, he tells us, works also. Neither ended he his work when he rose again, any otherwise than his Father did in the work of creation. God made an end of making, so Christ made an end of purchasing mercy, grace, and glory for believers by once dying. And as God rested at the end of creation, so he, when he had wrought eternal redemption, and by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of the Majesty on high, Hebrews 1, verse 3. But he ceases not to work by his intercession with God for us, and by his Spirit in us for God. By this he upholds his saints, their graces and comforts, his life, without which they would run to ruin. Thus we see his grace as a creature. The Christian depends on God for his strength. But further, the Christian's grace is not only a creature, but a weak creature, conflicting with enemies stronger than itself, and therefore cannot keep the field without an auxiliary strength from heaven. The weakest goes to the wall if no succor comes in. Grace in this life is but weak, like a king in the cradle, which gives advantage to Satan to carry on his plots more strongly to the disturbance of this young king's reign in the soul. Yea, he would soon make an end of the war and the ruin of the believer's grace, did not heaven take the Christian into protection. It is true indeed, grace, wherever it is, has a principle in itself that makes its desire and endeavor to preserve itself according to its strength. But being overpowered must perish, except assisted by God, as fire in green wood, which deads and damps the part kindled, will in time go out except it be blown up, or more fire put to that little fire, so will grace in the heart. God brings his grace into the heart by conquest. Now as in a conquered city, though some yield and become true subjects to the conqueror, yet others plot how they may shake off this yoke, and therefore it requires the same power to keep as it was to win it at first. The Christian hath an unregenerate part, that is discounted at this new change in the heart, and disdains as much to come under the sweet government of Christ's scepter as the Sodomites that Lot should judge them. What, this fellow, a stranger, control us? And Satan heads this mutinous rout against the Christian, so that if God should not continually reinforce this new planted colony in the heart, the very natives, I mean corruptions, that are left, would come out of their dens and holes where they lie lurking, and eat up the little grace the holiest on earth has. It would be as bread to these devourers. A third demonstration may be taken from the grand design which God propounds to himself in the same salvation. yea, in the transaction of it from first to last. And that is twofold. God would bring his saints to heaven in such a way as might be most expressive of his dear love and mercy to them. He would so express his mercy and love to them as might rebound back to him in the highest advance of his own glory possible. Now how becoming this is to both the saints should have all their ability for every step they take in the way to heaven will soon appear. 1. Design. God would bring his saints to heaven in such a way as might be most expressive of his dear love and mercy to them. This way of communicating strength to saints gives a double accent to God's love and mercy. It distills a sweetness into all that the believer has or does. When he finds any comfort in his bosom, any enlargement of heart and duty, any support under temptations, to consider whence came all these, what friend sends them in. They came not from his own cistern or any creature's. Oh, it is my God that has been here and left a sweet perfume of comfort behind him in my bosom. My God that hath, unaware to me, filled my cells with the gales of his spirit and brought me off to flats of my own deadness where I lay aground. Oh, it is his sweet spirit that held my head, stayed my heart in such an affliction and temptation, or else I had gone away in a fainting fit of unbelief. How can this choose but to endear God to a gracious soul? His succors, coming so immediately from heaven, which would be lost if the Christian had any strength to help himself, though this stock of strength came at first from God, which, think you, speaks more love and condescension for a prince to give a pension to a favorite, on which he may live by his own care, or for this prince to take the chief care upon himself and come from day to day to this man's house and look into his cupboard and see what provision he has, what expense he is at, and so constantly to provide for the man from time to time. Possibly some proud spirit that likes to be his own man or loves his means better than his prince would prefer the former, but one that is ambitious to have the heart and love of his prince would be ravished with the latter. Thus does God his saints. The great God comes and looks into their cupboard and sees how they are laid in and sends in accordingly as he finds them. Your heavenly Father knows you have need of these things, and you shall have them. He knows you have need of strength to pray, to hear, to suffer for him. And in the very hour, it will be given. Number 2, this way of God's dealing with the saints adds to the fullness and ability of their strength. Were the stock in our own hands, we should soon prove broken merchants. God knows we are but leaking vessels. When fullest, we cannot hold it long. And therefore, to make all sure, he sets us under the streaming forth of his strength. And a leaking vessel under a cock gets what it loses. Thus we have our leakage supplied continually. This is a provision God made for Israel in the wilderness. He clave the rock, and the rock followed them. They had not only a draught at present, but it ran in a stream after them, so that you hear no more of their complaints for water. This rock was Christ. Every believer has Christ at his back, following him with strength as he goes, for every condition and trial. One flower with a root is worth many in a posse, which, though sweet, yet doth not grow, but where, as we wear them in our bosoms. God's strength as a root keeps our grace lively, without which, though as orient as Adam's was, it would die. Application: is a Christian strength in the Lord and not in himself? Surely then the Christless person must needs be a poor, impotent creature, void of all strength and ability of doing anything of itself towards its own salvation. If the ship launched, rigged, and with her sails spread, cannot stir till the wind come fair and fill them, much less the timber that lies in the carpenter's yard hew and frame itself into a ship. If the living tree cannot grow except a root communicate its sap, much less can a dead rotten stake in a hedge, which hath no root, live of its own accord. In a word, If a Christian that hath his spiritual life of grace cannot exercise his life without strength from above, then surely one void of this new life, dead in sins and trespasses, can never be able to beget this in himself, or concur to the production of it. The state of unregeneracy is the state of impotency. When we were without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly, Romans 5:6. And as Christ found the lump of mankind covered with the ruins of their lapsed estate, no more able to raise themselves from under the weight of God's wrath which lay upon them than one buried under the rubbish of a fallen house is to free himself of that weight without help. So the Spirit finds sinners as in a helpless condition, as unable to repent or believe on Christ for salvation as they were of themselves to purchase it. Confounded, therefore, forever be the language of those sons of pride who cry up the power of nature, as if man with his own brick and slime of natural abilities were able to rear up such a building whose top may reach heaven itself. It is not of him that wills, nor of him that runs, but of God that shows mercy, Romans 9:16. God himself has scattered such Babel builders in the imagination of their hearts, who raises the spiritual temple in the souls of men, not by might, nor by power of their own, but by the Spirit, that so grace might be proclaimed before it forever. And therefore, if any yet in their natural estate would become wise to salvation, let them first become fools in their own eyes and renounce their carnal wisdom, which perceives the things of God, and beg wisdom of God, who gives and upbraids not. If any man would have strength to believe, let them become weak and die to their own. For by strength shall no man prevail. 1 Samuel 2:9. Application number 2. Does the Christian's strength lie in God and not in himself? This may forever keep the Christian humble when most engaged in duty, most assisted in his Christian course. Remember, Christian, when you have your best suit on, who made it? Who paid for it? Your grace, your comfort, is neither the work of your own hands nor the price of your own desert. Be not for shame proud of another's cost. That assistance will not long stay, which becomes a nurse to your pride. You are not lord of that assistance that you have. Your Father is wise, who, when he allows you most for your spiritual maintenance, even then keeps the law in his own hands, and can soon curb you if you grow wanton with your grace. Walk humbly, therefore, before your God and husband. Well, that strength that you have, remember that it is borrowed strength. Who will waste what he begs? Or who will give that beggar that spends idly his alms? When you have the most, you cannot be long from your God's door. And how can you look him on the face for more, who has embezzled what you have received?